All right, welcome back to another episode of the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast. Glad you could join me. And first, I want to apologize. We're fighting through a little bit of a cold here. That's why my voice is a little scratchy today. The Northeast weather has beaten me down. It's beaten everybody else down up until this point. We had a good show, though, lined up for you. Brian Scalabrine is back, NBC Sports Boston. Of course, he works for us over here at Yahoo Sports. And we go through all the news of this week, from Isaiah Thomas's return to the rise of the Toronto Raptors. We also look at some trade deadline possibilities, including down south in Orlando, where we could see a fire sale over the next couple of weeks. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. Joining me on the podcast this week, making his second appearance in a row, always glad to have him here, Brian Scalabrine, former NBA forward. You see him on NBC Sports Boston. You can check him out over at Yahoo Sports NBA. Scal, what's happening, man?
No, so this is 2 weeks in a row, so now I got to start asking the question. One, okay. Are you having a hard time getting guests? And two, like, eventually, if you ask me again, do you actually start having to pay me for this?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to throw you something if you go like 3 weeks in a row. But
I'll take a gift card, like a $25 gift card to Dick's Sporting Goods or something like that.
We have sponsors. We have sponsors
there
here on the show.
One time I did a podcast with you and you did a Blue Apron sponsor.
Yeah.
I want some of that Blue Apron action.
I mean, Omaha Steaks has been a sponsor before. I mean,
there we go.
Those packages they send are great. Those holiday packages, I ordered them even without the coupon I get from when they do my show. So we'll
start. Next time you ask me, I'm expecting some kind of swag bag from the Chris Mannix podcast.
I'll talk to you in April. We'll do it in April. All right. So the big story from this week is the return of Isaiah Thomas, who came into Tuesday night's game against Portland with very limited expectations. He was expected to play 10 to 15 minutes. He winds up playing close to 20 and plays extremely well, 6 for 12 from the field, knocked down a three-pointer, hit the deck a couple of times. I don't know, Scal, when I watched that game, I don't think there could have been a better return performance by Isaiah Thomas coming off the injury that he had and all the questions that were surrounding him. What did you think of what you saw from IT?
So that is what I saw from him is like my expectations of him. And realize, I don't believe that he has that pop and explosiveness that he had when he was gone before he actually got that initial injury. So I think he's like easing back, which you can expect that from him. But if he gets anywhere back to where he was before, as far as that explosiveness and his ability to create the space and his ability to score on the ball, he's really going to help this team. I know me and you, we differ on how good this Cleveland team is, but I think that Isaiah Thomas, I still believe he's on another level. I know he has a hip injury. I don't think that's going to be a long-term lingering thing this season or maybe even next season. I do think somewhere down the road it will affect him. But I if you watch him play, he's got a good poise to his game, and he actually inserts exactly what they need for that team. It's just a guy that you could probably put four other Cavaliers around, not including LeBron James, that do have the ability to be a net rating plus when he's out there.
Yeah, the hip – the questions that I have or that other people have, too, about the hip are not going to be answered until we get to, you know, 3 weeks down the line or 4 weeks down the line. How that responds to contact, to playing extended minutes, those are still unknowns when it comes to Isaiah Thomas. But what surprised me was how sharp he was. He was really sharp in the early part of this game. And he kind of, like, rope-a-doped us, I thought, a little bit last week when he said, I have no rhythm, I'm not in shape. He came out, and he wasn't perfect, but he knocked down a three. He went to the basket. He looked like the same Isaiah Thomas probing the lane that we saw him play in Boston. I think it's fascinating to see what Ty Lue is going to be able to do with him. You could see watching last night's game that he was already starting to experiment with Isaiah lineups, with Isaiah, with LeBron, without different guys on the floor with them. It's going to be fun to watch over the next few weeks as Isaiah rounds into game shape to see how Ty Lue uses him.
I agree. And I think, like, so a lot of people are talking tonight, he's coming into Boston. He's not going to play. But the real game that's going to be interesting is February 11th when he does return to Boston. It's a nationally televised game. Probably the Patriots to be coming off of another Super Bowl. Paul Pierce is getting his jersey retired that day. So a lot of hype surrounding that game. And I think that's the game where we can start to look at them and say, this is who the Cavs are. It's also right before the break, so a team could sort of be making a push for that. And it'll give a real idea of what this Cavs team is really about. Also, on the schedule, in 2 weeks from Monday, from yesterday, or I guess 2 days ago, Golden State Warriors coming to town as well, going to Cleveland, where now you could start to see, are they bridging the gap between where the Warriors are at and what the Cavs can become? So a couple of interesting games on the docket moving forward, but totally expected him probably not to play in this game. And they have a back-to-back coming up. I don't think he'll probably play in that, but it's going to be interesting that Martin Luther King Day on the 15th, where they play against the Golden State Warriors, is going to be must-see TV.
Yeah, my questions about the Cavs are mostly about their defense. And I know we have these questions every single year. And they're also about, I don't look at this recent winning streak as being evidence of, a team that has come around. I mean, I look at the schedule, who they're beating, how they're beating them. I'm looking at more than just, the box scores at the end of the game. And, they made their first, West Coast road trip recently. It didn't go all that well. Isaiah coming back certainly helps. But I watched the game last night, Scal, and first half of that game, they gave up 56 points to Portland, which was coming off a back-to-back overtime game against Chicago the night before. That, to me, is a red flag about where this team is defensively. Now, we can say that they'll pick it up in the playoffs and it's a different animal there, but I think concerns about the way this team has played defensively still linger and are still legitimate, frankly.
I've seen this song and dance before with this team. Okay. They can go to another level. They have the ability to switch. The playoffs are so much more physical. And at any moment in time, because of LeBron's brilliance as a player and how physically gifted he is, he could stop a run in his tracks just by doing it. Like, LeBron right now is like playing like this certain style where he's just like getting guys involved. He picks and chooses his spots. He's like dictating absolutely everything. I just find out when the playoffs start, he goes to another level and the rest of their team goes to another level. And I think when I judge them, I only judge them on, can they beat the Golden State Warriors? And that's why, like, for me, it's all eyes on Isaiah Thomas, because they have to figure out a team out there that's going to be plus when LeBron's on the bench. So in the playoffs, you're talking, 9 to 11 minutes. In the regular season, you're talking, 11 to 13 minutes. And they could probably put guys around Isaiah who has no problem being the focal point. If you put great shooting around him and decent defensive players and guys who can rebound their position, I think Kevin Love's going to be a great complementary player to Isaiah. I think those guys are going to work well together. I just think that this team has that ability to raise their level in the Eastern Conference, where the other teams, I'm not sure they have that ability to take another step. I just know that this team can. The question I always have is, are they able to bridge the gap with the Warriors, who, when the Warriors sort of get interested, which is interesting, when they get injuries, they turn it up a notch. A guy is out, they turn it up a notch. They go on these incredible runs. Whether it's no Kevin Durant or no Steph Curry, you start to see, like, all right, we got to actually play today. This is going to be fun. It's actually going to be a challenge, as opposed to some of these other games where they, like, drop a home game to Charlotte because they're just not locked in and ready to go.
It was fun watching the first quarter of that Cavs-Blazers game last night, because we're all kind of waiting for Isaiah to come into the game, and that's what everyone's kind of focused on. But I thought LeBron that first quarter was brilliant. I mean, poor Evan Turner, who we know, like, he was getting, just basically the full breadth of LeBron's offensive game. The attack, the basket, the fadeaways from both corners. I mean, I think LeBron offensively is playing at his highest level of his career. I mean, he's got the full repertoire, Scal, right now.
Yeah,
he's got no weaknesses in his game.
No, he has his go-to, and he could, and he does it, and he dictates it through the style that he wants to play. You know what? I'm going to be on the perimeter this time. I'm going to shoot threes off the bounce. Next thing you know, I'm going to love to watch him. Like, is he going to, you know how he used to just kick the ball over to Kyrie and be like, here you go, Kyrie, it's your turn. Is it going to be like a little bit of that with Isaiah? You know, I've been running this show, Isaiah, here you go. Is there going to be a little like 1-3, 1-4 pick and roll with LeBron at the four and Isaiah, and they're just like destroying mismatches, going back and forth? If there is a way to beat a team, LeBron is going to figure that way out. And that's why, like, I like to give him a hard time because of all the goofy things that he does. But As far as a player, he's the mind. As far as his skill, his offensive package, his ability to disperse the ball to whoever he thinks has a hot hand, finding Korver like through four defenders, that ball is like a beeline right on target. It is fun to watch. I agree with you. I think he's not as explosive as he was when he was in Miami. He's not as good in transition as him and Wade were when they were in Miami. But offensively, he is as complete as I've ever seen him.
Yeah. All right, so sitting in between the Cavs and the Celtics right now in the standings are the Toronto Raptors. And we're used to seeing Toronto at the top of or in the area of the top of the Eastern Conference standings. But this year, it feels a little bit different. The Raptors are no strangers to being a productive offensive team, a top 10 offensive team. But this year, their offense has diversified a little bit. They've spread the wealth around. They're playing with pace a little bit more. They're scoring more efficiently. When you watch Toronto, should teams be more concerned about the Raptors in the playoffs this year than they have been maybe in years past?
Yeah, all teams except for the Cleveland Cavaliers should definitely be concerned. Like, I would take them over Washington right now. I think them versus Boston in a second-round matchup would be a tremendous second-round matchup. Don't sleep on them. You know, they've already done their West Coast swings. They don't cross the Central time zone the rest of the season, so it's just Central and East for the rest of the year. They're definitely for real. Now, it's just, can they get over that hump? I don't know if they can or not, because every time LeBron teams to play against them, he dominates them. But I do like the way that they're playing. And how do you say it? It's OG Anunoby? Anunoby?
Anunoby? I don't know.
But he leads
Tom Crean somewhere. Tom Crean somewhere is listening and cringing at me talking about this.
He leads the Eastern Conference in net rating, and he can do that without even taking a shot sometimes. I like, and he's not afraid. Great athlete. He can defend. But we've seen it all before. Like, these guys who come in, like, we love this. It's Stanley Johnson. He's big. He's physical. He can guard LeBron until you see LeBron just, like, dismiss these guys. I said the same thing about Jay Crowder. We got a guy this year that can guard LeBron James. Then you watch him play, and you're like, oh, my gosh. There's a huge level between him and everybody else. So I am a big fan of Toronto. I've always been a fan of Lowry and DeRozan. I like Dwayne Casey. I've never been one of those guys that was like throwing Dwayne Casey under the bus. But, you know, like, I think every other Eastern Conference team should definitely be worried. And even that, the reality is, like, you know, Cleveland is not going to be an easy out. If DeMar DeRozan now is shooting the three the way he is, he sort of bypassed the catch and shoot and started going all the way till off the dribble. How do you guard him? They used to be able to go underneath the screen, meet him on the other side, take away his right hand, and still he would be effective. You have to go over the top now. I wouldn't say you have to. I would say he will make you pay if you go underneath the screen. But now if you go over the top, there's no way you could stop him from getting to that right hand and getting a quality shot. So Toronto has what it takes. Now, will they be able to get over that Cleveland hump? If I was a betting man, I'd say no. But I think that they're a legitimate conference finals contender.
My question about the Raptors is, can they continue this brand of offense into the postseason? For the last 4 years or so, they've been, you know, an isolation-heavy offense. They were sixth in the NBA last season in isolation plays. It's been a heavy dose of Lowry, a heavy dose of DeRozan, a couple other guys maybe mixed in. They've changed that this year. But at times, they have kind of slipped back into that iso-heavy sets. I mean, I remember watching bits and pieces of DeRozan's 52-point game. And look, when a guy's going off like that, you feed him the rock. But it was, when I'm watching that game, there wasn't a lot of ball movement. It was a lot of DeRozan kind of clearing out and making plays, and he was successful. But that style is not going to be successful for this team in the playoffs. And we know this because it hasn't been successful for this team in the playoffs. So occasionally I see them slip back into the team that they once were. If that happens in the postseason, they're going to get beat again in the first or second round. But if they can continue to play with pace, if they can, you know, be more efficient, if they can make those corner threes, their corner three numbers are way up this season. If they can keep making all those shots, I think they can be a threat to every team, including Cleveland.
Yeah, and I'm all in on Kyle Lowry this season, the way that he's playing. He's shifted more into a true point guard as opposed to that scoring point guard. Used to, like, sort of dribble the ball a little too much. So when you have that combination, both those guys willing to pass, and, you know, like, in 2 years ago, DeRozan was playing for his contract. Last year, Lowry was playing for his deal. I got Toronto being a tough out no matter who they play. And I think even if they do play Cleveland, it's not going to be how it was last year where Cleveland just absolutely steamrolled them. But, you know, Kyle Lowry missed the last two games. It's a completely different series. Have they bridged the gap? Yes. Can they get over the hump? My guess is still no at this point. But I like them. I think they're real, and I think DeRozan is for real.
Yeah, I give Dwayne Casey a lot of credit, too, for shifting things up. They've already been always been a good defensive team. Now they're a more diverse offensive team, and it's pretty impressive out there.
Support for the Vertical Podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
All right, I want to ask you about the Bulls, a team that you saw a couple of times over the last couple of weeks. This was a team that, you know, as recently as a month ago, we thought was going to be maybe the worst team in basketball. They were struggling. Mirotić was out. They don't have a lot of stars. And they, frankly, I think, thought they wanted to be the worst team in basketball. They need to get somebody to add to that mix to be their franchise player. Since Mirotić comes back, they have been a very good team. They've cooled off a little bit since winning, what, their first, I think it was six straight after Mirotić came back. But they're still winning a bunch of games. They're beating prospective playoff teams. What do you make of what the Bulls have done over these last few weeks?
So, yes, I'm in on the Mirotić, and he's a great player for them. He stretches the floor. I think with him coming back, it's like sort of equal the ascension of Chris Dunn now, who has way more space to work in there. They run a lot of lineups with Mirotić and Portis as a 4 and 5, which both those guys can shoot the ball, which gives Chris Dunn way more space. They got Zach LaVine coming back pretty soon. So I think really the question is, should they move on Mirotić because of him and Portis and whatever they went through in the beef? Or should they believe that this is their group? This is their nucleus of teams. You know, like Lopez will eventually be gone. They have a good point guard. They have a good two guard. They have Lauri Markkanen, who's, you know, a player that's on the up and rise. Now, should they push it, develop all these guys, try to make it to the playoffs, or should they go the opposite way, tank and try to get, you know, one of these great top five players who we don't know who's going to end up being the main man in this draft or not? So they can go two different ways here. My guess is they seem to me that they're going to go the opposite way and try to tank eventually after the break. But I think that they should push it and try to win with guys like Chris Dunn. I think it's like, I don't think anybody realized what they had in Chris Dunn until we saw Chris Dunn over the last like 15 games. We're starting to see, like, he is a real starting point guard in the NBA, which when he was in Minnesota, I couldn't say that I ever said that one time watching him play, nor when I watched him at Providence did I ever think that. I believe that he's a great two-way player. I think that he's going to continue to get better. I think Zach LaVine is going to help them out. The question is, what direction does the Bulls actually want to go? I'm hearing some things that they don't want to be good and they want to get a top five pick. My personal opinion, when you have a team like this that's young and impressionable, going for it's not the worst thing in the world. And I think it's all going to come down to Mirotić. Can they get a first round pick for him? Can they get a pick anywhere in the top 20 for a guy like, you know, it's going to be probably more like 15 to 20. Could they get that for Mirotić? And then should they? Should they move on a legitimate stretch four in the NBA, which sometimes you think that you can draft these guys and they just flat out can't play for a couple years. And you know, like Mirotić is like a perfect guy to teach a guy like Markkanen along the way. So I'm all in on the Bulls trying to win. I don't know if they are.
Yeah, I don't know if they are either. I don't think that the front office was very disappointed when they started the season the way they did, because they see, like everybody else, what the top of the draft is likely to look like. next spring. But you mentioned Mirotić, and he, to me, is the most, one of maybe, but probably close to being the most interesting player that we're talking about as we head towards February, because I think there's a lot of teams that he could help. I mean, he's got a pretty good contract, making about $12.5 million this year, team option for $12.5 million next year. That's, look, that's mid-level type money in today's NBA, a little more than that, but very, very manageable money in today's NBA. And he can play multiple positions. He can come off the bench. He can obviously shoot the three. I think there's going to be I think there already is, but I think there'll be a bunch of teams in the mix in February trying to extract him from the Bulls. And if I'm Chicago, I'd probably deal him. I think you take the best possible offer and you hold out for a while, but you probably deal him, don't you? Because I don't see him as necessarily being part of their future. When I say that, I mean, I don't think they sign him to big money after 2019. If you're not going to do that, and if his value right now is at its peak, go out and try to get that first-round pick. Try to get something, some kind of asset. Hold an auction for this guy. It has nothing to do with the whole Bobby Portis situation. It's just that you don't need to be good right now, and this guy's value is never going to be higher.
Yeah, so me and you might differ in this, right? Like, you don't believe that being an eighth seed in the playoffs is a good thing. Or what about a seventh or an eighth seed in the playoffs? Do you believe having a four-game
series? Well, it's
subjective,
right? It's subjective, right? Like, I thought for Oklahoma City 7 years ago, being the eighth seed was great.
Okay, I'm with you.
I think for the Bulls, no. I think because there's not one star on their roster. So I think they need to get that player.
So you think they need to be bad. And you don't think the development of Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, like to see all these guys hit the playoffs and see what the playoffs are like this year is good for them. Forget it. Let's keep going. Like, Jerry and Grant, like, he should see it. Bobby Portis, he needs to see the playoffs. Like, you don't think that those guys, it's important for them to understand what it takes to make it and see what that like is for them to take the next step afterwards. You think that they need to be bad and get a top five pick.
I do think it's important, and I think there is an upside to it, but I balance that against the upside of being bad and getting a top five pick and getting a Michael Porter or getting a Marvin Bagley, getting a Luka Doncic, any of these guys that are being projected in that top five range. I think that has a higher upside. Look, I go back and forth on the issue of tanking all the time. I hate watching it, but at the same time, I look at Philadelphia and say, is there a young team in the league whose roster I would take over the 76ers, and there's not. There's just not right now. So I think for this team, plus let me add this to the conversation. If it was just these young guys who are part of the core that are pushing Chicago into the playoffs, take Mirotić out of it. If it was just the LaVines and the Portises and the Dunns and these guys that you know are going to be part of your team long term, absolutely, I'd say grind it out and go for it. I just don't think that the Bulls look at Mirotić as being part of maybe their long-term plan.
Why not? He's a stretch four, like a legitimate stretch four right now in the NBA, which is not an easy thing to find in the NBA. Why at $12 million, or is he a guy that you want to get off of that money?
I don't think it's get off of the money.
I
don't think it's get off of the money. I just think you have to look like a year or two down the line and how you're going to spend that money. I mean, look, Mirotić in today's NBA, and let's just project out and say the way he's playing this season is kind of what he's going to average the next couple of years. What's he worth at 27 years old at the end of next season? Is it $18 million? Is it $19? I mean, what is he worth as a player on the open market? And if he is worth that much money, are the Bulls going to pay it? That's all I'm saying. I'm just trying to project a couple of years down the line.
Yeah, you're basically saying that if he's not in your long-term plan, get rid of him.
If you can get real value. I'm not saying like dump him for a couple of seconds. I'm saying if there's a first out there that you could use to draft the next Lauri Markkanen. Look, let's give the Bulls credit. Markkanen, who a lot of people I talk to.
You're not getting a lottery pick for – you're not getting him. You're not getting that. You're getting 15 to 25. That's what you're getting. And at best, that's what you're getting for Mirotić. And a lot of people wouldn't even move on that. They might not move on that for the 2018 draft. They might move on that for something in the future, like a 20 or even like a 21. People are saying, like, I can't give up my first-round pick this year for a guy like that, but I might do it for the future. I just think it's hard to find a team that's going for it, that's willing to part with their first round pick, that's not going to be later on, like late in the late 25. Like, I could totally see, I don't know what Houston's situation is, how and how it would work cap wise. I could see Houston going for a guy like that. Like, okay, fine. Yeah, we'll go for Mirotić. We're fine with it. We know we need shooting and we don't care about our, what if they're going to be the 28th pick in the draft? So are you doing it? You might, at the 28th pick in the draft, you might not get a player as good as Mirotić. Now, I hear what you're saying. That's different. He's under a different salary structure. It's low commitment. You have all these options of whether you want to go forward. It's a swing at the plate. I get all that. But if you're trying to get these guys some experience and you're trying to teach them the culture of winning, moving on Mirotić when you started playing this well just to lose to get another pick, which I'm at most times I'm all for tanking. If they would have went 3-20, they should have. I would have been fine with them being. If they know they're going to be bad, but there is a chance that you could push and make a run, and there's a chance that you can get into the playoffs. The experience that you get from your own players and their development and having the right culture does mean a lot.
Yeah, if you're Boston, would you move a first round pick for him?
What's the Celtics situation is, do they have their pick this year?
They
do have their own
pick.
Yeah.
They don't have the Brooklyn one. What they about the Memphis pick?
No, they have the Laker pick, which the Lakers are a whole other mess. I didn't think they were going to be this bad, but this could work out for the Celtics. Another move by Danny Ainge, which they end up calling him a genius. No one thought that the Lakers were going to be worse than Brooklyn. Yeah. But anyway, moving back on topic.
What about the Memphis pick in 2019?
So does he actually provide anything for them? Is he different than Morris? Is he different than, he's actually could be eligible, I think, for that disabled player since he is in the last year of his deal. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if they would want to go that direction or not. That's a tough one because I think they have all that. But
well, they need scoring off the bench. I mean, that's something that's been a consistent weakness this year. And if you bring Mirotić off the bench at multiple positions, I think that could give you something. I think that's where I'd like him there.
If we want to transition to this disabled player, it's like from all of my understandings of what's going on here, they're looking that they can get a guy this year and then re-sign the guy next year at a number that's reasonable. That's where they're trying to use a disabled player for. So if Mirotić is going to turn around and make $18 million and they can't make this deal work where they could re-sign him at $18 million, they don't want to use the disabled player for something like that. They want to use a disabled player for a guy that they could re-sign next year and more likely than not like a buyout. And then you sign a guy to the 120%, early bird right. So right. I don't know if Mirotić qualifies for that. I've been hearing rumors of Lou Williams, but I think it's going to end
playing,
up being a big.
He's playing his ass off. The
Clippers, we thought they were going to tank, and now they're like in the mix again, right? They can't make up their mind.
Not to go too far off the reservation yet, but Boston's going to get somebody with that DP. I mean, like the because the understanding what the DP is the full $8 million, right? I mean, like that's like somebody that gets bought out in late February, whoever it may be. Let's use Lou Williams as an example, and Lou's looking around, and a bunch of teams are calling. Most times, it's teams saying we can only offer you $1 million prorated towards the end of the season.
Yeah,
what
which
Boston
is
can do is throw the full $8 million. So whoever it is can make, if they go all in, can make $8 million for basically a month and a half of work.
Yeah.
Like that they're going to get somebody with that exception.
Yeah, and I would assume it's like a wink-wink deal that, hey, and we're going to give you 120% raise on the next season. So you're going to get $8 million for a month and a half worth of work, and then we're going to sign you to 120% raise on that for next year. So you end up making, over the course of one full season and 1 month of a season, you'll make somewhere around $18 million. And that's really what the Celtics are trying to navigate towards when you think about a DPE, not a guy who's just going to come in and help you. And if you want to go even one step further, if Aaron Baines continues to play the way that he's playing, he's going to be worth more than $4 million. and the Celtics might end up losing him because they only have his early bird rights. So it's like, it's a really complex and interesting system that I don't think it has anything to do with this year. I think it all has to do with the following season.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let me finish with this, with a team that I think is going to have some kind of fire sale before the end of the season. That's the Orlando Magic, who have not been good this year, battling injuries. What's that?
How bad are they?
I mean, they're bad. They're bad. I mean, injuries are a problem, but they're not the problem down there. That's a roster that needs to be overhauled. They've got a new front office in place in Jeff Weltman and John Hammond. And look, I think to some degree they're basically auditioning a bunch of these guys to see if people are interested before the trade deadline. I expect the Magic over the next month and a half to start being more proactive about trying to move these guys because the front office didn't give anybody any extensions this offseason. Hezonja, Elfrid Payton, even maybe Aaron Gordon could be in the mix for a trade possibility. If you're a contender, Scal, do you look at anybody on that Magic roster and say, that guy could make a difference for me?
A contender? Terrence Ross at $10 million a year. I would say he's a guy. I would love to extract Jonathan Simmons, which I think it's a good deal at $6.5 million. Everyone will be interested in Aaron Gordon. What is that price? It might be attached to like a Bismack Biyombo, 17 and 17, 34 for he has 3 years left this year and two more. So if you want Aaron Gordon, who you're going to have to pay, you might have to eat that Bismack Biyombo contract. But I don't think that anybody on this team, from Orlando's perspective, is like untouchable. I think that they will build around Aaron Gordon, but I think they would not be afraid to package him for a guy like a Bismack to get off of, you know, Bismack's salary. They just, like, they were bad and they made the wrong. It's like, it's the whole tanking thing all over again. If you're going to tank, you better be right. You can't be wrong. Like, if you're going to tank and you're Sam Hanke, you better pick Porzingis and not Jahlil Okafor. If you're going to tank and you're rebuilding, you better pick Victor Oladipo over Elfrid Payton. You can't make catastrophic errors like that when you're tanking, because then it just prolongs the tanking. And eventually you're bad for 10 years and people give up on you and you get fired. So the point of tanking is be bad for 3 years, get three good players, and then like move forward with your organization. They've been bad for like 5 years. One thing one guy I think that is untouchable is Jonathan Isaac. I think they really like Jonathan Isaac. He does have to stay healthy. But this team right here, they can do a lot of things. And if they were really on a fire sale, I think they could end up, you know, really clearing some space.
Do you think that Aaron Gordon is a franchise player? Like you mentioned, you think they'll build around him. Do you look at him as being that kind of tentpole player that you can do that to?
Yeah. So he's one piece of, you know, like two others, right? You got to have nowadays, like you can't just have one guy anymore. I think you got to have like three or four guys. So I think like Aaron Gordon could be a guy, one of four, one of three, but he can't be the main guy. It's like, how many main guys can there really be in the NBA? I think there's like maybe if I'm giving them the benefit of doubt, I'll say there's 10 of them.
Yeah.
But reality, there's probably five that real guys and that you could build around, like to say like these are championship type of players. One thing that he does have, it qualifies, he's physically gifted. So now you just got to teach him the game. But like guys who can physically dominate the NBA, that's important. But Aaron Gordon, he has a long ways to go. He's not anywhere near the Giannis's or the LeBrons of the world or the Kevin Durant's of the world. He has a long ways to go before he's there, but he continues to improve and he continues to work.
I
don't
like
think they'll ship him, and I don't think they'll ship Jonathan Isaac.
No, I think Isaac is off the table. That's, you know, a young guy that, as you said, they really like. He's got to stay healthy, but he's incredibly athletic, and I think they like his potential there. Do I think they're open to Gordon? I think they might be open to moving Gordon, but it wouldn't be just a sell-off. You'd have to come and go get Aaron Gordon out of there. You'd have to, you know, give them something real back in return. Whereas with a guy like, say, Elfrid Payton, who is going to be a restricted free agent, or Mario Hezonja, who they didn't pick up his option for the next year. These are guys that I think if there's any kind of asset that you're willing to give up, and maybe it's not even a first-round pick, maybe it's a future or protected pick, I think they'd be willing to deal those guys, because I just don't think the front office is all that in on these guys? I mean, if Elfrid Payton got a big offer in free agency, would they match it? Probably not. I think they'd let him walk away. And I think after this year, Arizona's going to walk away anyway.
Yeah. Are they in on Evan Fournier? I don't know. Are they in on
– Could be.
They definitely aren't in on Bismack Biyombo. That was a mistake.
No.
Him and Mahimi.
What a bad contract. Unbelievable.
Yeah, they both
I remember Scout, the Toronto – the Toronto front office actually laughed at that deal. Like, they had Biyombo slotted like for half that. Like,
yeah.
You know, people in that front office actually chuckled at that deal. There was no chance that they were going to come back and make a counter on a Biyombo offer there.
No, it's like that year. I'm surprised that more people haven't got fired for that year. And I laughed at the national media that they want to scoff at Danny Ainge for not doing things and not signing guys and preserving cap space when everyone was giving away money during that time. And how many of those deals that year when the cap jumped are good deals now?
No.
Five? Six deals are good deals now? The rest of these guys are like, what are you guys doing? You're stuck. Not only if you want to give a guy, if you have the cap space and you want to overpay a guy $25 million for a year, so be it. But why string yourself along moving forward on these guys? You know, like, just come big, give them the money, you like them, see what they're going to do, overpay for them, and then be done with them the following year or re-sign them. That's why, like, I love, when I was in the Big Three this year, everyone was laughing at the J.J. Redick deal. I called them all idiots for laughing at this deal. That's a perfect deal. You have the space. You have some guys that are on the come up. You go ahead and give J.J. Redick all – try to get to the floor, overpay for J.J. Redick. You have no commitment moving forward. What do you mean that's a dumb deal? That's one of the most brilliant moves of the offseason, and you guys want to scoff at J.J. Redick's not worth 25? That's because you guys don't understand the cap. That's what the cap is used for. If you're really smart, you use these one-year deals all the time. Overpay, non-committal. It's like it made no sense to me at all.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a bad one-year deal. Like,
no,
you know,
I agree. I mean, you can give a guy $50 million in 1 year, and it doesn't hurt you long-term. It hurts you more to give a guy, like, 3 years 60 than 1 year 50.
Yeah. Yeah, because your cap's all tied up. People forget sometimes that you have to spend this money. You have to spend 90% of the cap, or else you're going to have to, you know, dole it out anyway to people that are already – on the roster. Why not spend on a veteran that might be able to help some of your younger guys improve on the way to winning? All right, Scout, man, I appreciate it as always. Next time,
Omaha Steaks.
$5 Omaha Steaks gift card, which I think should get you, I don't know, like apple tartlet, I think they have on that menu.
I at least get a quarter pound burger?
Yeah,
get one burger?
You know what? On this podcast, we'll give up McDonald's gift cards. We'll do that, and that might be able to suit you.
All right, you owe me next time.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Brian Scalabrine for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.